Hello, welcome to the Snooker Scene Podcast. I'm Dave Hendon. This week I chat to Ricky Walden. He's won three ranking titles. He's been a very dedicated professional over the years. But in recent times he's had his health problems. He's had a problem with his back. And he talked about that and he talked me through his career. This is the Snooker Scene Podcast with Ricky Walden. Okay, so Ricky, how did you discover snooker? How did you start?
Through my dad, to be honest. It was he used to get me into every sport, a bit of golf, cricket, darts, and then it was snooker. So I was playing all at a young age, like quite steady at all of them really. But then I seemed to excel and love snooker from the start really.
Why do you think that was the one that sort of trumped all the others?
I'm not sure. I think because I sort of maybe. Like anybody, if that's your strongest sport, then I think you sort of play it more. So that was it for me really. I was putting quite a few balls, and my dad loved it as well. So it was something we were doing together, you know. So it's I suppose from there really.
I mean, lots of people take up the game when they're young, but most people don't get good. Did you sort of realise? Oh, hang on, I can actually make breaks. I can play this game.
Yeah, I think I was good for like an 8-9 year old playing on the tables, you know, but looking back I probably wasn't any better than most people, you know. But from where I was from at the time, there wasn't really many kids playing the game, and obviously your parents always think that you're better than you are anyway. Yeah. So I got back from my mum and dad and stuff, and I went from there really. And then when I went into school and stuff, I started improving and onto the junior tour and stuff like that, and started improving quickly really.
Yeah, and this would have been, I guess, sort of early mid 90s, where there was a thriving junior scene in Britain, so you had a lot of tournaments to play in. And that's a way to improve, isn't it, to play matches?
Yeah, without a doubt. I don't think you could have improved without playing in them kind of events, you know. It's like Malcolm Thorne was responsible for so much around that time. He was doing so much good for the game with the England internationals and having the mini one dayers and the junior events twice a weekend, you know. It was brilliant. So I was just throwing myself into everything, into the Northern Snooker Centre, and every Saturday, Sunday I'd be driving somewhere to play in, you know, and just sort of toughens you up, and you start to see some results come through, which is also good as well.
And you'd be playing guys who you wouldn't know at the time obviously, but then went on to themselves, like yourself, become a top player.
Yeah, obviously, like the top guys like Selbs and Murphy and Maguire, all these guys that I've sort of played, Ryan, so many, you know. And it's always good to see that the guys who started with Malcolm and playing in them kind of events and the home internationals have gone on. Sure. It's no coincidence, you know, that they've all gone on to do great things. So I think it was a real good foundation to sort of learn the game really.
Did you think it could be a career at that point? You'd only be still a kid. I mean, did you think actually this is a profession, or was it just you were playing for fun?
Yeah, it was quite weird really. I always thought I was going to it sounds strange, but I always thought I was going to be a professional snooker player. It was strange for his school, you know. I remember getting kicked out of a lesson in school because everyone used to stand up and say, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to be a snooker player." And they sort of sent me in the corridor because they thought I was taking the mic, you know. So yeah, it was always in my mind, and I left school early and stuff like that, and never done my exams. I'm not sure whether you class it as luck or whether the positive thinking comes into that side of things, where you were always going to do that, you know. It seems quite high risk, but yeah, there was nothing else I wanted to do apart from play snooker really.
So what was the transition from those junior amateur days to turning pro? Because the system has changed so much, hasn't it, over the years. I think there was like a challenge tour back then that you're on?
Yeah, that's right. I got on through challenge tour. I think I was sort of late getting on really from my proper players really. Sean and Mark got on pretty quick. And I struggled to adapt really. It took me a few years to come through the challenge tour, but I eventually got on through that. And then, yeah, that transition was difficult really, because you were going from playing on different conditions that you were comfortable to playing on slick conditions against much better players. And then all of a sudden it was a shock to the system when you realised you were playing the older guys who were just much better than you, you know, and you couldn't really see it at the time. You thought you were better than you were. And then you'd play someone like Tony Jones and you'd just have you in knots, you couldn't compete with him, you know. So it was difficult. It was a difficult time really. And I guess looking back, there were some great players who never kicked on to become professionals. Good friends of mine at the time, you know, like Craig Taylor and Luke Fisher, who were just as good, I think, and Sean and Mark and maybe myself and stuff. And they never sort of made that transition for whatever reason, you know. It was difficult because financially you couldn't support yourself. You had to put the hours in, and it was just a difficult transition with for various reasons, really.
I think it's a good point you make about the older players, because obviously in the junior ranks you're playing people of your own age, but suddenly you turn pro and there's people who've been there maybe 30 years and they know every aspect of the game, match play, stopping you getting in, stopping you knocking in long balls and really tying you up, and it's a bit of an apprenticeship, I guess, learning all that stuff.
Yeah, 100%. There's no other way you can learn it. Just like the junior days, there's no other way you can learn it unless you throw yourself in. And the problem with when you turn pro at that stage and you're playing these guys, you ain't really got too much of a chance unless you up your game quickly, you know, because they're tying you in knots. You're playing for financial pressure, you're trying to stay on the tour. And I actually fell off the tour my first year. I didn't win enough games and they gave me a concession on, you know, luckily enough, and that gave me a second bite of the cherry, and I sort of took that chance, really. But yeah, the older guys just so knowledgeable with the safety play and even scoring, really. You don't think they can score, but at the time they were scoring way better than I was.
And also I think there's a natural sort of inclination for some of the young players who've had success as a junior. You sort of think, oh, I'm better than all those, you know, because you're used to winning and you think I'm going to, you know, get these old guys, I'm going to roll them over, and it doesn't work like that, does
no,
it?
No, not at all. I think that's a good point. I was coming into the game expecting just to tear up the tour, really, in my own mind. I'm not sure other people were thinking that, but I was definitely thinking that, and it just didn't work that way, you know. I was just miles off the pace compared to the other guys, and like, the reason they've been on the tour for so long is because they're great players, there's no question. So it was tough couple of years to sort of make that transition, really.
So when did you feel that it was starting to turn around? Did you just sort of suddenly start to get, you know, results?
Yeah, I think one of the earliest memories that I can remember, I played at a couple of venues, but then I played Tony Drago in the British, I think. And I sort of got beat in the game, but I enjoyed the match table for the first time, really, and I started to play well, and I made a few breaks, and I was unlucky not to go into a decider, I think. And then afterwards he just gave me some advice, really. He just said, like, listen, I read in that there was like an article or something saying, like, what are your ambitions? And my ambition was to stay on the tour,
right.
And he said, listen, you need to change that, it's not about that. He said, I think the way you've played there, you're good enough to move up through the game, you know. So when you hear things like that, and I was practicing a lot with Rod Lawler, Ian McCulloch, Dave Harrold, just brilliant players who've just been around for so long and played the game at such a great level. And just the advice from them, really, I just stayed grounded and listened to them guys, and I sort of felt like I was making progress, even though the rankings weren't quite saying that.
China Open 2005, you got to the quarterfinals. Everyone remembers that event because Dink won it, and of course sparked the boom. But it was a significant week for you. I seem to remember you played. Was that the tournament you played Steve Davis, and he had to pull out? He banged his head on the door.
That was.
Oh, I got that wrong.
Oh no, wait there. Yeah, it could have been that. Yeah, it was that. Actually.
He banged his head on the door before the match. Got dizzy.
Yeah, it was that. So that's the only way I was getting to the quarters wrong.
Well, no, it was just a strange thing to happen, wasn't it? But I suppose, you know, quarter final, that is the next kind of, you know, you're trying to always improve. You reach one then, that's significant.
Yeah, that was a big moment for me. I remember playing Hendry in that quarter finals, and I got absolutely annihilated. It was just another big lesson, you know. I remember just looking at him thinking, this guy is just on another planet to me. And they're the kind of moments, I think, if you're humble enough and you're willing to work, they're big moments in your life, you know, when you can realise how far off the pace you actually are. And then go on and improve, you know. But I had some good wins that week as well. I think it was either Matthew Stevens or Ken Doherty that I beat in that game. Maybe Maguire, you know. And they were big games for me at the time, you know. I remember thinking, give you a lot of confidence.
But also, like, it's in Beijing, so you're not just stuck in some qualifier. You're actually now part of tournaments, because that's also the case. Like when you turn pro, there's a lot of qualifying to wade through. It's not like the system now where everyone comes in the first round. And you know, you might be on the tour, but to a lot of people, if you're not in a tournament on TV, you're not really a professional.
Yeah, that's it. That's the way the game sort of is shown now, really. It's sort of, if you, there's a lot of great players you don't see on the TV, you know, because the way the system is now. And yeah, that was a big time for me to sort of get onto the main table and sort of experience that. And yeah, the game's just as tough now, you know. You've got to scrap your way through, and you've got players who, I'm the older guy now, sort of, and you've got young guys. You probably think I'm no good, and they're trying to bully me. So it's a big cycle and stuff. But that was a good experience over in China to sort of toughen me up, I think.
Mm. Okay, well, obviously your big breakthrough in terms of winning a tournament was 2008 Shanghai Masters. So I think it's worth sort of just recapping who you actually beat in that tournament. You beat Stephen Hendry, Neil Robertson, Steve Davis, Mark Selby and Ronnie O'Sullivan, and they're all like top 10 of all time players, really.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, you look at tournaments and draw will open up. It didn't open up for you, did it?
No, I also had I also played Anders Lang in a qualifier in that over there as a wild card, you know, and that was sort of, I remember going into that thinking this is a tough game.
Yeah.
Didn't know Ander at the time. I won that match 5-0 and just sort of got a bit of table time really. So then the Hendry game come along and I was fancying getting the result, to be honest, but it was obviously a tough game. 4-3 down, made a couple of breaks. And yeah, it just went from them really. The confidence sort of, I find like I just get surges of confidence sometimes in it, and it can really kick me free, you know. And them kind of games when you're coming from behind, I seem to remember just coming from behind in pretty much every game. And that was 2-0 down to Davis, 4-1 down to Selbs, 4-1 down to Robertson. That was a monster game really, because I was never in that. And just got some momentum really, and yeah, I sort of, I'll be honest, from the semi-final, I didn't really speak to anyone apart from my dad at the time, but I fancied winning that tournament from the semis, you know, and I'm sure no one else did, because the prices were big on what it was, you know. I was a big rank outsider, but yeah, the big thing for me is settling into a tournament, and I felt settled at that with the tables and comfortable with what I was doing, so yeah, it was a good breakthrough week for me really.
Mm. It's interesting, like, because you're playing Ronnie in the final now, that's obviously, he's been there and done everything already. You're a big underdog, but I think it says a lot that you actually felt, no, I'm going to win this. You know, you didn't go into it like a rabbit in the headlights.
Yeah, no, it didn't feel like an occasion to me, really. It didn't. It felt like a good experience, but it wasn't one that I was going, I'm just going to enjoy it. You know, I hear a lot of people sort of say that. And that wasn't the way that it was for me, really. I went out there thinking that I could be the champion of that tournament, so I was going to give him my best shot, and it sort of went that way. And I think even the way that I won the tournament, you know, I got ahead of myself to win the match 10-7. I think I missed the most simple red you've ever seen, and I was thinking about back home, mum and dad and stuff, and the pressure. I did feel the pressure at that, but then I had to send you in the next frame. You know, it was always, for me, it was always going to happen. I know that's easy to say now because it was a long tournament and playing some great players, but yeah, it did feel like it was going to happen that week.
And what did it feel like to win a tournament? Because, you know, you already said you're the boy who got sent out of class standing in the corridor because you said you're going to be a snooker player. Now you've proven yourself, you've won a tournament. What were your thoughts sort of immediately after that? Or did it take a bit of time to maybe sink in?
Yeah, more so for the family, really. Yeah. It was just more about, like, the sacrifices that my mum and dad made. It's just unbelievable. Like I'm sure all the guys have had that kind of stuff, you know. It's tough, but yeah, I just couldn't stop thinking of my mum and dad back home and just how proud they would be of it, you know, and because they probably want it more than me sometimes.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it felt normal. It didn't feel like a crazy thing. I just went out and had a few beers, enjoyed the night, and just sort of spoke to everyone back home. Really, it felt pretty normal, pretty right. Really.
Mm. And then things sort of picked up a pace for you. You played at the Crucible first time at the end of that season. What was that? That's like a rite of passage, isn't it, for a player to get there? You must have been relieved to finally play there.
I've had a strange career with that side of things, to be honest, because I always seem to run into some tough games in that last qualifying. You know, I played Selbs there, I played Mark Allen there. I remember playing Anders Zang, and he just played crazy stuff. He played brilliant, you know. And
I remember the last two frames, I think he made two centuries.
Yeah, he played good. Don't get me wrong, I wasn't at my best, but he did play some good stuff, you know. So, when I was going out for a few beers for around that time with my pals, they were calling me the best player never to play the Crucible, so it was painful, you know. It was a painful time because I wanted to get there, and I beat Anthony Hamilton 10-5 to get through to the first time, played Selbs there. And yeah, it was a good experience, you know. I was really glad to get that out of the way because it was starting to stress me out a little bit.
Okay, and then we fast forward a little bit to, you then won your next ranking title, Bushy Classic 2012. I suppose you've won your first, and there's an expectation maybe from yourself as much as anyone else, well, we've got to, you know, he's won one, he's beat Ronnie in the final, he's going to be a regular winner. But it's not that easy at all, is it? You know, these are tough events to win.
No, it's a little bit the same as when, like what you said about the junior level, when you come through and you sort of do expect to feel something that's just going to make you invincible, but maybe it happens to other guys, but it didn't happen to me. It just made me, I felt under more pressure if anything, so it took me a while and stuff, and regrouped and tried again. I'd actually made a technical change at the back end of the Worlds the season before, and I played Jamie Jones in qualifying, and I was all over the place. I lost 10-2 to him, and I was so embarrassed the way I played. But I'd been working on something, and it was in the match, it didn't work out for me, you know, what was going on. So then I had the summer off, come back, didn't practice too much before that Wuxi, which is not like me, I'm normally bang on the table. And yeah, again, it just sort of, I didn't play great that week, to be honest. I was just scrapping and digging things out. And then eventually I end up in the final, and then with Stu and just sort of scrapped it out in the final, really. So it was pleasing to win the event a different way.
Okay. At the end of that season, you found yourself in the World Semi-Finals, so you're suddenly on the one table set-up, played Barry Hawkins. And you were in front, weren't you? But the thing is, it's such a long match. Like, being in front, maybe is not that significant, because you've got like another two sessions to come.
Yeah, it's a strange thing. Obviously, anybody will tell you who's played in that one table setup over that kind of distance, it's really strange to play. You know, it's one of the most enjoyable snooker moments I've had, really, being in that environment, playing some good stuff at times, you know. But yeah, I felt like I could have won it that week. It really did feel good to me, you know. I felt like I was going to go and win it, and I just had a bad session at the end, and I just sort of unravelled a little bit, you know, which can happen. I sort of missed a few balls, and it was stressing me out, and I kept missing a few more balls, you know, and I just sort of lost momentum. Barry started to hit the ball a little bit better, and yeah, I lost control, and it was devastating. It was a real tough one to lose, you know. It's sort of, I think about that all the time, that game, and you wish you could have just maybe just got a grip of it a little bit more, you know. But it's tough to win them tournaments, you know. The endurance level you need to sort of be tuned in and concentrated and technically right for that kind of distance is hats off to any of the guys who've took that tournament down, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's so mentally demanding, and not only when you're in the arena, but there's also, it's how you spend your time between the sessions as well, because you've got to sort of stay relaxed, I suppose, but also focused on what you're doing, and try not to dwell too much on a frame that you've lost, and it's really hard, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really tough. And that final session, because I threw away the lead, really, the way I missed the balls. I'm not sure what the score was, but it was something like 12-all or 14-all that final session, and I'd thrown three frames away. And I remember I was sat with my wife, and I just couldn't speak, you know. I felt like I'd lost it already, and if I could change one thing going back, you know, I'd scrap that. I'd be better at that now, you know. I'd be, having the year's experience, I'd be going in there all guns blazing. But I went out that last session tired, a little bit shot through, a little bit angry, and it felt like the damage was done, and I hated that feeling.
Okay, well, a happier feeling came following you, of course, international championship. I guess that's your biggest win so far, certainly in terms of the first prize. Talk us to that one, because that has sort of become a really big event, hasn't it? A new event, but a big event.
Yeah, it's a monster event, really. It's like you said, it's the biggest one of my career so far, and it was great to win. It was a strange tournament again for me, really, because I was out in Hong Kong playing in a small event first, and I was struggling. My game was all over the place. I was changing my tips, didn't know what was going on. Changed my tips a few times, and I went there with a new tip then, not with much confidence under my belt, not playing great, and then scrapped out a win against David Morris in the first round, and then just sort of got momentum, really. I sort of wrestled a bit of momentum, and then by the back end of that week, then I was playing probably as good as I've ever played, really, you know, not probably at my best, but as good as I played consistently from the quarterfinals onwards. So yeah, it was a good week, and I was pleased sort of to come through the way I did, really.
Yeah, and I think it's worth saying, like, I mean, obviously people listening to this are snooker fans, so they know this, but these are big tournaments. I've heard people say about you, you know, he's won three ranking events in China, as if somehow that's not quite the same as winning one in Britain. These are massive tournaments.
Yeah, I think from my own, like, my mum and dad always pick up on that kind of stuff, you know, they're always screaming at the TV and stuff, and yeah, it's tough. You can't choose where you're going to win the event, you know. I've been in the semi-finals of two UKs, been in a final in India, been in a final in England, been in another final in China. You know, it's tough. The standard's that high. You can't choose where you're going to play, you know. And if Ronnie was to win a tournament in China, nothing gets mentioned. You know, Ronnie wins it because he's the best around. And if John Higgins wins a tournament in China, well, it's John Higgins, you know. So, but if I win one, it seems to be like, well, yeah, you can't win in the UK. So it's difficult.
What sort of almost on your behalf annoys me is you hear people say he's won them in China. Okay, well, let's hear what they are. They've got names, these tournaments.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And like I've already said, that first one, you beat like five Hall of Famers to win it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and the thing that I'm proud of is, if I look back, and let's just take the finals anyway. Now, I played O'Sullivan in the final. I played Mark Allen in the final. Stuart Bingham, you know, then like the tough games, you know, to play in finals, and they're as good as there is around, you know. So yeah, I've got no problem with it. I'm comfortable with what I've done so far. Obviously, you'd like more, you'd like to be more consistent and all that kind of stuff, but But yeah, big events, and if all I ever do is win in China and win more events, I'd be more than happy with that. You know, it's a big part of our game now.
Absolutely. Well, somewhere amongst all this, you found time to run the New York Marathon. Which, I mean, what was all that about? That was kind of out of left field a little bit, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just my friend sort of. My friend's a bit nuts, and he just said, "Oh, I might go and do the marathon." Hmm. And I said, "Oh, what are you doing that for?" He said, "I don't know, just to freshen up, stay off a drink for a little while, and we'll see how we go." So I said, "Well, you can have a drink after it." And he said, "Yeah, probably. We'll go for a few beers." So I said, "Right, I'll do it if we can go Vegas afterwards." So
right,
So yeah, it was just something I wanted to challenge with, really. I wanted to drop a few pounds, and I was always running anyway, 5Ks and stuff. And I just thought, you know what, it might be a nice distraction. It's a healthy distraction to sort of run alongside with my snooker and stuff.
And what was the actual experience of doing it like? I mean, did you get sort of a few miles in and think, what am I doing?
Yeah, it was good. I trained properly, to be honest, even though I wasn't physically like super sharp. I trained properly, so I'd done a few 20-mile runs beforehand. And in my mind, my goal was just to run it, no stopping, you know, as long as I don't walk it, then I'm fine. So, yeah, I just signed myself up, and then I hit the wall at about 17 mile and just thought, like, I felt like crying. It was pain, you know, it was tough. But yeah, I come through it. And it was just to test myself mentally, really. It was probably, I'd have to say, it's the hardest thing I've ever done, even because the snooker is what you always do. You can win a tournament because that's what you've always done. But yeah, running that was the hardest thing I've ever done.
I'm hoping, because you also got married in New York, I'm hoping that was a more pleasurable experience.
It was okay. Yeah, it was okay. Yeah, we just had a nice ceremony just at the City Hall, just a little in and out job, really, and a few beers and a nice steak, really. It was just quite casual, what we wanted. We didn't really want a big fuss and stuff. And so, yeah, New York's important to us. You know, we always go out there when we can, and we enjoy being out there, the hustle and bustle, and it's nice. Both two different experiences.
Yeah. Another person, apart from your wife, who's been important to you, of course, is Lee Gorton, who is your manager, and sort of also someone who you can talk to during tournaments, and I guess sort of almost sort of keep you sane a little bit.
Yeah, without doubt, we've been friends a long time now, and he's helped my career no end. He's helped me win all them events. He knows the game as well. Like, he knows more about the game now than he ever did because of the time he spent with us. You know, we talk about a lot of stuff, and good guy, good to help me out with my game. Good to go for a beer with when the time's right as well, you know. And we've sort of been inseparable on the tour really for all this time, and it's good. Long may it continue.
Because the thing is, you know, it's striking the balance, isn't it? It's quite a lonely sport. It's an individual sport, but you don't want a massive entourage with you, because then you've got to think about what they're doing, and maybe they'll try and drag you out for drinks or whatever. It's good to have someone in your corner, though.
Yeah, without a doubt. You just need to be sticking to sort of basic plan, really, you know. And that's what we sort of do. We sort of like, we'll come to a tournament and give it everything that we can, and then if you're out of the tournament, you're not flying for a couple of days, then we'll go and have a blast, you know. And so it's good, it's important for people to have that around them on the tour, I think, like you say, because it can be pretty boring. The long flights, hotel rooms are boring, you know, and you can get sucked into the wrong things as well, going out for a beer too much before games and stuff like that. So yeah, it's important to have somebody who you trust around you, I think.
You've never been involved in controversy, that's not your thing, but there was one World Championship where you played Rory McLeod, and it was a very kind of drawn out match, and you famously said it was like a visit to the dentist, and that obviously was the World Championship that kind of got picked up a bit. What are your thoughts on that now? It's quite a while ago.
Yeah, it's sort of I didn't mean, at the time I was frustrated and I was embarrassed of my own performance, really, more than anything. I still stand by what I say, as in it was tough to be involved in, you know. And I think the straw that broke the camel's back was, I think Rory was close to winning, and I looked up and there was three old women about four rows up, and they were all asleep, and I thought, you know what, I'm a part of this game, and I was trying too hard. I was almost trying to play two games that day. And I felt like I was trying to entertain and win a snooker match at Sheffield with a lot of pressure, and it was just going horribly wrong for me, you know. And I don't really listen. I said what I said at the time because it felt like that's what it was. But I've got no problem with Rory. You know, it was just a tough match to be in, and I was frustrated with my own performance more than anything.
In recent times, you've had your health problems. Just talk us through what exactly they've been, and also sort of how it is now.
Yeah, just got a problem with the lower back. Really, you've got like a disc bulge, and it goes into a little bit of sciatica and stuff like that. Really, so it can be pretty painful. I'm sort of managing it okay at the moment. Had a couple of injections in there, steroid injections to numb the pain, but it can flare up at any time, you know, if I'm not careful. I've got to be careful with what I'm doing. No more running, no more lifting, that kind of stuff. and just trying to manage it best I can, really. It's been good the last few months, picking up. I've been putting more hours in on the table, and I can feel my game slowly coming to somewhere near. Still miles off where I want to be, but coming to somewhere near. And yeah, I've just got to stick with it, really. I'm just thankful that I can play again, to be honest, because it was feeling like I wasn't going to be playing snooker too much. So I've just got to manage it and not get frustrated and see where it goes.
And do you think the problems you've had are actually related to playing snooker, all the practicing and all that?
Yeah, it's 100% snooker. You know, I speak to the specialists and they just say wear and tear of the body. They were actually looking at scans of my back and where it's worn away and where I've got the bulge. They said, if you weren't sat in front of me now, you think you were a 50-year-old guy, you know. It's took that much wear and tear. And they said, the way you're hinge lifting and down for a shot is going to impact the body kind of thing. So, yeah, I think that, as well as running marathons when you're nowhere near fit enough to run a marathon at 15 stone, doesn't help. But listen, I can't really change it now. It's been my life, so hopefully I can keep monitoring it and keep managing it, really.
But it has affected your form, hasn't it? Because you slipped out the top 16. It must be connected to the problems you've had.
Yeah, it's been difficult, to be honest. Like, I wasn't in great form before the injury. Like, I'll be honest, I wasn't playing some great stuff. However, I always felt like I could go on a run and do something. Where as soon as that injury hits, it was impossible for me to win frames at first. You know, I couldn't win a frame in qualifying because I couldn't get down on the shot properly. So yeah, it's 100% related to me dipping out of the 16 and not really getting any momentum from anywhere. You know, so the fact that I'm just pleased the way that I fought back to actually compete again. You know, that's how bad it was. So I feel as though I can, even though I'm not playing at my best right now, I can sort of stick in games and play the odd decent frame. So I'm just pleased to be back competing again.
And how do you sort of see the future? I mean, you're still a young man, and players are winning, seem to be winning tournaments older and older now. But you've had this health concern. So how do you sort of, what is your sort of immediate, I guess, ambition? Is it to rise back up the rankings? Is it to win another tournament, or just keep playing?
I think tournaments will always be an opportunity for me to win a tournament. It's whichever I take, you know. It's the kind of player that I am. As long as I'm putting the work in, I'm physically, I'm okay. There'll always be a run in there for me. I just know there will, because that's the way my game is. I'd like to be more consistent. I'd like to be technically a little bit better, but that's not my game, you know. And I've beat everyone in the game, but I've also lost to everyone in the game, and I sort of know that, and it's quite frustrating. But the positive side of that is there's no question that I can take a tournament down when I'm right, and that's okay with me. I'm okay with that. So I suppose for me it's just about getting myself in position for another big event, really. Whether that's in China or the world or wherever, you know. I do feel as though there's more in there.
You seem to be someone who, a bit like Sean Murphy or Mark Selby, you really like snooker. You're not sort of tortured by it. I speak to some players and they're very much a love-hate relationship. Seems with you it's much more love than hate.
Yeah, I think when I was a little bit younger, I always used to say that I hated it. But it was just because I was young and I didn't know what I was saying, really, and I was just frustrated that I wasn't winning more. But yeah, listen, the game's given me absolutely everything. All my life, it's been given to me through snooker. My wife, where I've been, the house that I live in, everything, it's come from the game, you know. And so yeah, I love it. I just want to keep playing as much as I can, and hopefully it can give me some more.
Okay, good to hear that, Ricky. Thanks a lot for your company. Good
thanks
talking to you.
Thanks very much, Dave. Thank
Cheers,
you.
Thanks.